Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, this is the EFL Freezer Crowd podcast, where we take a light-hearted look at all things Football League.
You scumbag, you maggot. Matt Smith, Troy Parrott.
I'm James, lifelong COV fan, and I'm joined each week by self-proclaimed Statman Luke and resident Millwall fan Andy.
Gary Monk sacked after a 0-0 draw with Millwall as well. Although most clubs in the Football League would die for a result like that.
We'll be covering important news, a run through the games, and our all-important goal of the week.
Yes. 3-0 to the own goal.
So find us with a new episode each Monday on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to Aston Millwall, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Huge welcome to Akdung Millwall, dear listeners, and we have a very special guest here for you today. A BAFTA-nominated stand-up comedian, TV writer, co-host of The Price of Football, the immensely popular Price of Football podcast, but much, much more important than any of that, the first Crystal Palace fan ever to appear on Akdung Millwall. It's Kevin Day. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thank you for having me, Nick. I feel slightly... Because of Kieran Maguire, the Price of Football other person who's a Brighton fan, he talked me into doing a Brighton podcast the other night. So right, I'm a bit confused. The last two podcasts I've done now are a Millwall one and a Brighton one. So it's a strange. Yeah, I've kept it quiet. I'm doing the Palace pod later on today. I don't intend to mention either of the last two.
Well, we'll only put it on Twitter, mate. That'll be strictly between you and me. Don't worry about it. That's a strange rivalry. I've got to up front. I had this on my notes to mention the Crystal Palace Brighton rivalry. I know it dates from the Alan Mullery era, doesn't it? Malcolm Allison.
It dates from a very specific game. I mean, it's the strangest rivalry. It's interesting that you say rivalry because we had Darren Ambrose on our pod recently.
Right.
Who kept saying it's not a derby because it's not local. So eventually we had to compromise with calling it a rivalry. It's the strangest one probably in football. And I think we quite like it because of that, because it baffles other people. it's become our own special thing. But it relates to a specific game which I was at.
Right. Okay.
1976, second round of the FA Cup final, the FA Cup.
Yeah.
So that was, we'd got to the semi-final in May.
Remember it well. Yes, absolutely.
Lost, I cried my eyes out after we lost to Southampton.
But Stamford Bridge it was played.
Yeah, it was Stamford Bridge. But then, oddly enough, this game against Brighton went to a second replay at Stamford Bridge. And I was there and it was a horrible night. And Brighton battered us, but we beat them 1-0 with a penalty that shouldn't have been given. And then we missed it. But then the referee made us... take the penalty again because a Palace player had encroached in the box and he thought it was a Brighton player. So it was a controversial game, but right. It ended up with Alan Mullery marched towards us in the away bit,
yeah,
where we were, and threw a handful of coins at the
fans. Oh, did he? I didn't know that was the
origin. Which is the most bemusing thing because, yeah, it was odd enough to see a manager marching towards us anyway, but then he threw the coins. And then in the press conference afterwards, he tore up a £5 note, so I wouldn't give you that for Palace or their fans. But that all related to Terry Venables, because him and Terry Venables hated each other at Tottenham.
Yeah, apparently there's no love lost between the pair of them.
No, they apparently really disliked each other. So that was why he was upset with Palace fans and Terry Venables. And I don't think it would have gone anywhere else except for the fact that we both got promoted to the old second division that year. And then the year after that, we both got promoted to the old first division. So within 3 years, it had become the most intense rivalry. And, you know, neither club have got a reputation for violence, even back in those days. But the worst violence I've ever seen at football games was between Palace and Brighton. It was very, very weird.
Very odd.
And then Ron Nodes took us over, and Alan Mullery became our manager. And it's the most odd thing, because Alan Mullery was at the first game he took charge of Palace, he was booed on by Palace fans, and he was booed on at every single game he was in charge. And he took charge of probably the worst Palace team for a long, long time. And we genuinely, it got diluted a little bit because we didn't play them very often because they were, you know, out of the league for a long time, out of the top flight. And then Steve Coppell became their manager. So, but it's still, for my generation, it's still the big rival. And I met Alan Mullery once, and he wouldn't even shake hands. He said, I know what you've said about me. I know who you support. And then my favourite bit, and I shouldn't boast about it, but we played Tottenham in the FA Cup quarter final in 2016.
Yeah.
And some bright spark at BT Sport thought, well, Alan Mullery played for Tottenham and he managed Palace, so that, he's obviously the ideal person to interview. So there was 6,000 of us there that day, and none of us could believe our eyes as suddenly Alan Mullery emerged from the tunnel and was being walked down to our end, basically. Which and then after 15 seconds was walked away from our end. And it is, and I'm really not proud of this, but a Palace fan threw a coin at him, and I went, mate, seriously, he fucking started it. So I thought, fair enough. It's a full-on rivalry, strange, because I know Millwall fans and Charlton fans who are slightly insulted by the fact that that's become our real rivalry, when they think it should be them. And of course there's no love lost between us and Charlton and Watford at the moment either, which is a bizarre one. But Brighton will always be the one.
And it's
strange, because I can't think of any other rivalry that intense that goes back to one single game.
No. I mean, I wasn't aware of that. I knew that Alan Mullery and Malcolm Allison, obviously two very, very flamboyant figures of the 70s and, you know, and before that. But I wasn't aware that was the origin of it. I mean, I suppose Charlton also. I mean, Crystal Palace and Charlton with the ground sharing thing that happened in the 80s. There's also a certain kind of...
It's more on their behalf than it is. It's the same with...
It's one-way street.
I've never quite understood that. It's the same with Wimbledon fans who really hate us because they shared our ground, as though somehow it was our fault that they shared our ground. And Charlton feel the same way about us because they shared our ground, and also they don't particularly like West Ham because they shared their ground,
didn't they?
But it's interesting, because when I was first becoming a football fan, you know, when you're sort of like 10, 11, 12,
your formative years,
they're the years when you know more about football than anything else. You know the manager of Mansfield, you know the Clyde Banks, you know everything about football. And in those days, like, older Palace fans would say, no, it's the triangle, it's Palace, Millwall, Charlton. That's the three. They're the rivalries. And then suddenly it was Brighton, and everything else was pushed aside. And it is a strange. Malcolm Allison's another strange one. My dad's absolute favourite Palace manager, and along with many other Palace fans, even though he got us relegated two seasons running.
Well, I was going to ask you about him, because, I mean, obviously, I went to school in Chislehurst in the early 70s. Yeah. And the school that I went to, I came from a council estate, and the school that I went to was predominantly middle class. I don't know how other way to put it. Yeah, bit cliquey kids, Orpington kids, and they largely followed Crystal Palace. So I was a kind of aware of Palace's ups and downs at that time. And Millwall and Palace, they had a rivalry. It never seemed to be quite as vehement from the Millwall perspective as it did maybe on the other side. I don't know. But certainly from the Millwall perspective, Palace were kind of there, but they didn't occupy the kind of devil positions of West Ham and Spurs and Chelsea at that time.
Well, that's what we always associated with Millwall, looking north and east for their rivalries rather than us. And it's interesting, because I always get quite bemused, because Danny Baker, for example, still goes on now about old Palace were a middle class club. We had no time for them because they weren't like us. But it's like, Danny Baker's clearly never been to Thornton Heath.
No, he's never been to Croydon.
He's never been to Croydon because I can't think of any place that's further from being a middle-class ground than Sellers Park. But it's strange. We were always, yeah, we always thought of Millwall as rivals until Brighton came along. But you're absolutely right. I think Millwall didn't see us as any friend. And also, I think at the time we were quite patronised. And we were sort of like the Orient of South London in a way. Do you know what I mean? No one was that bothered by us. And the thing with Malcolm Allison, until Malcolm Allison came on, we were the most nondescript. I mean, you can't even really point out where we are on a map. Do you know what I mean? It's the same with one of the reasons I love Palace so much, because where I'm from in South London, it's sort of Tooting and it's sort of Streatham and it's sort of Mitcham, but
nowhere land, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. There's not even an estate agent name for it. Do you know what I mean? So growing up, all my identity was from being a Palace fan. But until Malcolm Allison came along and sort of made us the Eagles and gave us the kit, we were kind of a nondescript sort of. We were just, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 people supported Palace, and that was it. We were never a threat to anyone, and I think Millwall probably reacted to that, because I mean, Millwall were a bigger club than us for the most of the first years I was supporting Palace, to be perfectly honest. But I'm still proud of that, the identity thing. I was educated out of my class. You know, I'm a South London working class boy.
Yeah,
still got an element. You know, you don't have to look far to find the chip on the shoulder, to be perfectly honest, which is not.
Well, that's good to hear. As we want more of that.
It's not necessarily healthy. Do you know what I mean? But I'm still proud of the fact that people say, oh yeah, you're a comedian, aren't you? Or you're the writer, or you do this, but the vast majority of people go, oh yeah, you're the Palace fan. And that makes me really proud. The fact that people identify me with my football club. And it's like you with Millwall, because it's been a baseline throughout the whole of my life.
Absolutely.
It's always there. Absolutely. Whatever's going on in your life, good or bad, you've got Sellers Park to fall back on. You've got your Palace mates. And again, I'm sure like you, Nick, I sort of miss the football. I sort of miss going to the actual games, but I don't miss it anywhere near as much as I miss going to the Porson's Arms.
Yeah, it's the social quality of it.
Totally. And it's what my wife describes as going to the same pub, sitting in the same seat, in the same corner, talking the same bollocks to the same people that you have done for 20 years. It's like, yeah, that's the whole point.
It's a routine of life.
It is. And it's like you do that beforehand, and then afterwards, win, lose or draw, you do it afterwards. And it's, you know, that's what I miss that so much. And every football fan says the same thing. And I think as well for Millwall, as an away fan, Nick, I'm aware that I'm not answering questions you haven't even asked me now.
No, you go for it, mate. You're like using up all my worthy notes.
I like the sound of my own voice. But as an away fan, I used to hate going to Millwall. It was a terrifying place to go as an away fan, and I could never understand it. It's like we look the same, we sound the same, but somehow they could spot us. You know, you never wore a scarf to an away fan. But having said that, a mate of mine, Barry's a Millwall fan, and I used to go to the odd Millwall game with him without Palace being involved, and I loved it because I found. It's almost the biggest compliment I could pay to Millwall. It was like going to a Northern.
It was raw.
It was not only raw, but there was a community feel. Mm. It was like going to a big non-league club, and I don't mean that in a. It was going somewhere where the fans all seem to know each other because they weren't travelling. And it's the same at Palace. It's like, you know, you go to Arsenal, you go to Tottenham, you go to Chelsea. Of course, they're London clubs, but they're not London clubs in the way that we're London clubs. And you go to Arsenal, Tottenham, Chelsea, half the people in the crowd have travelled 100 miles. Whereas you go to Millwall, and I used to think, these people have only travelled 2 or 3 miles. They all know each other. And I really quite like that. And also, I quite like the fact that I'm from an Irish Catholic background. I've got cousins all over the place. And one of my cousins in Yorkshire was a big Man City fan. And he was always the North this and North that. The piss you drink down there, but he was terrified of Millwall, and in a strange sort of, because I used to say to him, "Yeah, where's Millwall that you won't go to?" It's in London. Oh yeah, right, okay. So there is something good. Yeah, it's a strange thing to admit, but I used to quite like the fact that there was this London feel about Millwall. It's the most London of all clubs, if you see.
Yeah,
it's a strange thing to articulate, but. Going there as a non-Palace fan for Millwall games, I used to think, there's a couple of times you think, this is wrong, but it was good wrong, if you see what I mean. Now, yeah, it's hard to explain, but I don't think I think even other London fans don't fully understand the tight knit, the closeness of Millwall. And in a way, I resent you go through Bermondsey now, and it always makes me like, you know, I always have Danny Baker's words in my head about us being middle class, but you go to Bermondsey now, Jesus, there's a lot of.
That's the changing face of London, Kevin, isn't it?
The demographic has changed. It's like going to a Dulwich Hamlet game. You go through Bermondsey now, it's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it made me laugh the first time I saw a Japanese restaurant on Jamaica Road. I don't know if it's still there. My dad would have turned, you know.
Yeah.
It is wearing a grave, but you know what I mean? It's that kind of, wow, look at that, a Japanese restaurant.
And then he would try some of the Japanese food and he'd really like it. It's
like, I don't know about that. You know, you are going too far. It's great to have you on the show. The reason, listeners, we are talking is because Kevin's got a book out available on Amazon. It is called Who Are Ya? 92 Football Clubs and Why You Shouldn't Support Them.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting concept. So this is you've written about the 92, the Premier and the Football League.
Yeah.
That's quite a feat, Kevin. One of my questions, have you done that? I mean, you've gone to some obscure places.
The original concept was 91 football clubs. And right. Why you shouldn't support them, but then Bloomsbury thought it was that it appeared too much of a Palace book, if you see what I mean. Mm. So they wanted they wanted me to include Palace in there as well. And it came about. It's a true story. I came back from an evening game, a Palace evening game, quite a few years ago when my boy was still little, and obviously I came back late and had been drinking. But I opened the door. My boy was still up, and he was hop, and he's like, so I thought immediately, well, something's wrong here because he shouldn't be up. Yeah. And then I could see my wife looking a little bit anxious, and he said, Dad, before I go to bed, I've got something to ask you. And it's like, oh, okay, what's the matter, mate? And he was only eight. He said, can I support Blackburn? So I said, well, when you've got your own job in your own house, you can support all you want. But in the meantime, get in your Palace pyjamas, get under your Palace duvet and say goodnight to Sellers the cat. You know what I mean? But then I said, why Blackburn? He said, well, Dad, you never come home happy. I went, well, that's part of the joy.
Part of football, isn't it?
It's part of football. No one said there was any happiness involved. And he said, I started going through all the other clubs and till I found one that you didn't hate. And Mum said, you didn't hate Blackburn because you got drunk after an evening game, and that was the first time you said you loved her. It's like, oh, well, crafty mummy, well done. But I said, I wasn't drunk. I said, the train broke down on the way back from Blackburn. So by the time we got home, I was hungover. I wasn't drunk. But I said, of course I hate. But that's when I first had the idea, this strange interconnected web that all football fans have, where, you know, football's the most important thing. And when push comes to shove, we'll put rivalries aside to help other clubs. But we all have this strange, bizarre, unlikely link of clubs that we hate. So I kept the idea under my hat for a while. Then a year and a half ago, out of sheer economic necessity, I was having one of those periods without work. I'll write this book up, and lo and behold, Bloomsbury took out. And I knew I was onto a winner when I mentioned to a mate of mine who's the nicest bloke in the world. You couldn't meet a nicer bloke. But he's a West Ham fan, and he said to me one day, "Are you still writing that book?" I said, "Yeah, I'm trying to." He said, "What chapter you want?" I said, "Oldham," and he just went, "Don't fucking talk to me about Oldham," and he just went into his whole like three particular games. And so I thought, well, if a West Ham fan hates Oldham that much, I'm onto a winner here. But I just wanted to, I've always wanted to write a book, Nick, but I've always had this kind of imposter syndrome growing up. Do you know what I mean? Okay. I've always kind of thought, I'll never write a book. It's not the sort of thing I can do. I'll never be asked to write one. So I was really delighted to get it off the ground. I loved writing it, but I didn't want it to be nostalgic. I wanted to write a book that had every club in it. I wanted the Mansfield chapter.
Well, I was going to ask about the likes of Macclesfield and Mansfield.
Yeah, I wanted those chapters to be as long as the Man City, Man United, Liverpool chapters, because Mansfield, yeah, Macclesfield and Bury going out of business. It's the end of the world for 10,000 people.
Absolutely.
And you know, the 5,000 Mansfield season ticket holders love their club as much as the 5 million global Liverpool fans love their club. So I wanted to reflect that. But I also wanted to reflect the fact that I had personal memories of most of these clubs. And the chapters that were hardest to write were the clubs like Burton Albion, where I've never been to Burton Albion. We've never played them. I've never been to Burton, and it turned out I didn't know where Burton was when I even looked it on a map. So
I've been there. You haven't missed much.
Exactly. So in the end, you find things. And I wanted each chapter to have a different thing, but I wanted to write a book. And the really important thing was when I first started writing it, Matt, my editor at Bloomsbury, said, look, this is really good, but you're writing it for non-football fans. You're qualifying too much. You're explaining too much. Just assume that everybody who buys this book will love football as much as you do and write for them.
Right,
so which was brilliant, because I just wanted to write a book where I talked about my experiences as a Palace fan, but I wanted to make them genuine. So I wanted a Millwall fan or a Bradford City fan to go, I've got a mate like Chris, who's always late. I've got a mate like Roy, who always got us into fights and never stayed till the end. I've got a mate like Steve, who never bought a drink. I wanted it to reflect the joy of football. I wanted it to be not a secret, as I wanted loads of people to buy it, as I've lost all my other work this year. But I wanted it to be.
I was going to ask about that, yeah.
But I wanted it to be a book that football fans would like, because I genuinely feel. I mean, I love all sorts of. I get a bit cross when people say to me, when football fans say, how can you waste your time going to the theatre or reading a book? It's like being a football fan doesn't mean you can't have other interests. And I love the theatre, I love cinema, I love all sorts of things. But I don't understand. People who don't like football, they're missing out on so much. And I wanted the book to reflect that. I wanted the book to reflect the sheer joy of the train. It's like that train breaking down on the way back from Blackburn in 1989, 3 o'clock in the morning. And I wanted people to understand, because everybody reading the book, I think, will have stories like that. When it's like we went to Wrexham, it must have been probably 150 of us at most. We went to Wrexham.
Yeah.
And we won our first away game for 18 months. And I'm still dining out on the fact that I was one of the people who saw that.
Yeah,
the
badges of honour, aren't they?
Yeah. That's exactly the word, the badges of honour. So I wanted the book to reflect the sheer passion, but also wanted the book to reflect the sheer illogicality of being a football fan. And the fact is that I'm an intelligent bloke, I like to think, but if somebody sidles up to me in a pub and tells me a fact about Palace, I'll just believe it. I'll just think that must be true. And it's like the West Brom chapter. In the West Brom chapter, I write about there's eight different reasons why West Brom are called the Baggies, apparently. If you look at the club's history, and you talk to them, eight different reasons why they're called the Baggies. And they're all bollocks, all of them. None of them have got hold any water at all. But West Brom fans will offer you out if you disagree with their version of why West Brom are called.
It's like that boing, boing, boing thing they do. I've heard about five different reasons why they do that.
They don't even know why they do that. And that's the thing. It's like I was talking to a West Brom fan recently, because one of the versions about the West Brom thing is that the players went on strike in 1920 and they had to get kids in to play, so the shirts were all too big for them. It's like, that's nonsense. But they go, no, it's absolutely true. But the thing is as well, it's the same when you... Because I didn't want to do too much research on the book, Nick. I wanted to write it... spontaneously. I wanted it to be like writing stand-up in a way. I didn't want to spend 6 months in libraries or on the internet coming up with really deep historical facts. Right. I wanted it to have a feel for the club. I mean, there are facts in there, but I say in the introduction, don't use it as a textbook, for the love of God, because and the problem is as well, even looking at the history of Millwall, when a football club started, it's like I played Sunday football for five different teams, but essentially they were the same team. It's just we changed the name and we changed the kit, but
same characters.
But it's the same. The same people play for each team. It's just that we moved to a different pub and changed the name. And it's the same when football clubs started, and there were hundreds and hundreds of them. Nobody wrote it down, because they didn't think, right, we're going to start a football club now, and in 100 years' time we'll be in something called the Premier League. They just started playing football, and so all the stories are kind of locked. And because it's a work for the greater part, there's one or two exceptions, but nearly every single football club comes out of a working class community.
This is one of the points I wanted to ask you about. Because, I mean, obviously, I mean, the Price of Football podcast, which is excellent, listeners. If you're not listening to it, listen to it. I mean, one of the things I take from it, Kevin, is this kind of, it's like the Ian Dury song, the England's Glory, the jewels in the crown of England's glory. This is something, 92 clubs, professional clubs, from the highest to the lowest, is something quite wonderful. And we take it so much for granted, don't we?
It is wonderful, Nick. And people sometimes accuse Kieran and I of being too romantic about football, because Kieran Kieran says that all football grounds should be Grade 2 listed buildings, basically. You shouldn't be out. And, but he's right. He said you shouldn't be out of touch. They should be protected. Okay. They should be protected so that some chancer can't come along and buy your club and move you out. And, you've had issues around all sorts of stuff with your ground and the council and what was going to happen. He said football clubs should be protected. But for me, as a my passion is history. And the history, I'm obsessed with the history of London. It's like... if I could put Londoner on my passport, I would have Londoner as my, and I'd be happy to put a moat around the M25 and declare an independent.
That's going on, isn't it?
Well, at the moment, yeah, you're right. It's, but I love London and I love London's history. It's like I love one of my favourite train journeys is from Norbury to London Bridge. We pass your ground, but as you get towards Borough, and like you get a slight sense of what London must have been like. With those
Dickensian kind of feeling.
Lovely with the Borough High Street and Borough. Yeah. I love it around there. But the reason I'm so romantic about football is because it's almost the last vestiges of working class history that's still out in the open. And it's like growing up as a kid, I'd never been to Walsall, but I knew they made saddles there. Yes. I knew they made hats in Luton. You learn about...
You do learn stuff.
Yeah. And I think it's still, for me, football clubs should still be at the heart of a mostly working-class community. And most grounds still are, thank God, especially when you get to League One and League Two. But it's got to be more protected. I think that's one of the reasons why Price of Football struck a chord with people. It's just that when we first started, I thought it was the worst idea. This bloke approached me. He was... Five Lives business editor, so he had my details from the old days. Sent me an email to say he wanted to start this concept of a podcast about football finance. So I sent him a very polite email back saying, "Well, good luck with that. I'm sure it'll be wonderful. I'll try and give it a listen," and not meaning a word of it. And he said, "No, I'd like you to present it." And I replied to him and said, "Mate, I'm not allowed a credit card now. I'm so bad with money. I'm shocking with money. People think I'm joking. I get Christmas cards from Sutton Tax Office. That's how close my relationship with them is." And he said, "Well, I know that because I've heard you talk about it. So that's why I want you to do it." So I ended up, and we did. So he introduced me to Kieran and we met. Right. And it was only, we'd done four episodes before Kieran admitted he was a Brighton fan, which made me laugh because I'm a grown up. I would still have done it, but it still made me still talk to him. But it struck, because luckily enough, the very first one we did was in the week that Bury was going under, and Kieran, with his forensic analysis, Kieran just explained exactly why Bury was going under and explained exactly how the EFL could prevent Bury going under. And he did it with, as I say, like proper forensic
like a precision,
analysis.
Which is what I
proper,
was.
It was proper. It's what it's like. It's like a laser beam. And I just did in the background was going, "Well, this is fucking this can't be allowed." So I think people just picked up on that passion we had for football and the fact that we just want to make football right. And the fact that we've always spoken about the fact that there will be a glorious day when we don't need to do the Price of Football podcast because all the money in the game will be distributed fairly and every club will be safe and secure and we won't have to worry about it. But that's a long time off. But it's just we're both of us are passionate about it. Kieran knows he's going to get pelters from me every time we speak because he's from the Elephant and Castle. Right? His family were Millwall fans, so he should support.
He's found Millwall. Brighton, God almighty.
He's found Brighton, but he God love him, he loves him, and that's fine, that's up to him. And again, it's the Brighton thing, he's still coming back to where we started the conversation, because when I first started writing the book, my idea for the Brighton chapter, I just wanted to have a photograph of a seagull stealing a chip off a toddler. Bloomsbury said that was childish and I had to write properly about Brighton.
Yeah, you've got to be a proper writer.
So I wrote properly about Brighton, but I spelt Brighton with a small b all the way through and they said that's childish as well.
That
so
is childish,
I said, it's funny, but it turns out Brighton's got more independent bookshops than anywhere else. But Kieran, we're both passionate about our clubs. And I think... Yes, people accuse us of being romantic, but I don't think you can be too romantic about football clubs. I love the arts. I love culture. I don't, if you're going to save theatres and you're going to save opera houses, you have to save football grounds. It's as simple as that.
It's not seen in the same light, Kevin. It's
not, but it should be. And that fucking idiot MP who said the culture of the North is football and the culture of the South is opera. It's just like...
Yeah, well, that's bollocks.
It's total bollocks. And that's the other thing as well, as football fans... We have more because I remember going to Burnley a few years ago. We hadn't played Burnley for a while. And went up to Burnley And you look, you get off the train in Burnley and you go, Jesus, this is what austerity looks like.
It's a tough, hard place.
But you go there and you think, Jesus, they've had it. This is what austerity looks like.
Absolutely.
We know that because we travel the country seeing these places. It's like no one travels to Durham or Darlington to see an opera, so they don't know what's going on in the world. And it's like football, it should be treated the same. And it's a working class game, but I drink in the Paulson's Arms. And it's working class people. It's a working class pub, but there's theatre producers in there. There's accountants in there. There's lawyers. All people that have, from similar backgrounds to us, but have done. And also there's cab drivers and there's train workers. But there's all sorts of people. And people, the government don't understand. And why I'm still furious, Nick. And again, I'm aware I'm answering the question you didn't ask.
No, you go for it, mate.
But Michael Gove, when they were talking about. When we were coming out of the first lockdown properly, they were talking about getting fans back in the grounds, and Steve Parish was one of the very many chairmen who said, "Look, we can get fans back in now. It's as safe as anything else." And Michael Gove said in public, "It was why there wasn't more of a fuss about it." He said, "It's not the grounds we're worried about; it's that we can't trust fans not to get drunk, not to muck about on trains." It's like they genuinely think. Working class football fans are going to have a drink and climb all over each other. And it's just the lack of understanding of what football as a cultural thing means to us. And it's important to us, Nick. Football's an important thing to all of us.
I'm stupefied by it. I mean, I wonder this, and it's totally off tangent in my notes. I'm kind of thinking aloud on this, Kevin, but I sometimes wonder whether social media stupefied us into this kind of accepting, like we lurch from sensation to sensation minute by minute online. And so something like Gove coming out with that, and I read the same. Yeah. Remarks, and you think, well, how do you get away with that? How can you come out with this? It's a man from such a different social background. He has no knowledge of what he's talking about, and yet somehow he gets away with it.
I think you're right. I think it's probably because there is so much else going on social media and in the news that it gets lost. It ends up on the bottom of the pile, and then after a week or two, people don't take it, anything that's more than a week old, no one takes seriously. And it's like, I keep trying to remind people of it, and they keep saying, all right, fine, we know you think that, let's move on, you know what I mean? But it's just, that's just one example of the, and also, because I talked to my son who's 25, you and I, Nick, I'm guessing we're a similar age. You said you were educated in the 70s, so we grew up in the worst days. That's why I didn't want the book to be nostalgic, because going to football now is a much more pleasant experience, to be fair.
God. But
I tell my son and his mates what the experience of going to football was like. We went to a game once. It was a Wolves game, and the special was like four coaches.
But
it was attached to a normal train. But we were padlocked in. There was padlocked bars between our four coaches and the normal coaches. There was no toilet. If it'd been an accident or a crash or a fire,
you're dead meat.
And the way we were treated by the, because I'm an old-fashioned Guardian reading liberal lefty, but I think if you keep treating people in a certain way, they're going to behave in a certain way, and it's no wonder there people reacted the way the West Midlands police was shameful. And you knew as an away fan which games you didn't look forward to. It's like, I never liked going to Sheffield United, not because of their fans, I think Sheffield's a brilliant city, but because the South Yorkshire police were arseholes, so were the West Midlands police. And it's like, I said to one copper once, any other day of the week I'm a citizen, you've got to treat, but somehow on Saturday I'm a piece of shit. That's their image of football fans, that we're all uncontrollable violent idiots who don't deserve decent facilities, and if we do, we have to pay through the nose for it. And it saddens me, it sickens me, it angers me. And I think that again, it comes back to one of the reasons why people take price of football so seriously.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah,
that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You're listening to After Millwall.
I think also as well, it's because I think if we were if I supported Man United and Kieran supported Liverpool, I don't think people would tap into the pod as well as they do. It's just that they know we support teams that aren't fashionable, never will be, but also that we go to games. Like, I've been to, I think it's about 72 grounds supporting Palace. Kieran's been to 144 supporting
Brighton.
Yeah,
that's an achievement.
Because they've been all over the, you know, they've been in League One and League Two more recently than we have, which I'll remind him. But, you know, people know that we're actually football fans. He's not just an accountant or an economist. I'm not just a broadcaster.
That's the great divide in the game though, Kevin, isn't it? Those that go to games, those that actually turn up and stand in the rain, sun or whatever you want, and those that watch it on the telly, because unfortunately the game has developed into a TV entertainment, especially at Premier League level. You know?
Without a doubt, Sky and Beat. But also I think that the other division, Nick, as well, is between not just the top six, but Arsenal fans, Man City fans. I remember being in a comedy store dressing room a couple of years ago, and Arsenal had got to the FA Cup semi-final again, and there's a comic in there, an Arsenal supporting comic, who goes to games, to be fair. He's a proper Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
But he's there going, oh, for fuck's sake, we've got to go to Wembley again. And it's like, my God, if you ever get to the stage supporting Palace where you're moaning about having to go again, to Wembley again. And it's like, and again, it's like, it's really odd. You talk to Man City fans, like I've got family, that Man City fans, you know, obviously they love what's happened to the club, but you ask most Man City fans what their favourite game was, and they'll all say the playoff final against Gillingham at Wembley
when they were coming out of League One
and they were 1-0 down with a minute to go. And it's like they still yearn. That's a strange thing. All these clubs, Arsenal, Chelsea fans, and Chelsea fans are they always make me laugh, that because immediately you say to somebody you support, they go, Chelsea, yeah, but I've been since the old days. It's like, and then they go, well, I'm not Chelsea. Because somehow if they say Chelsea, you go, okay, well, you've been since the old days. But you talk to a lot of Chelsea fans, you show them a picture of the old Stamford Bridge, they wouldn't fucking go to the old... They wouldn't be Chelsea fans if they had to go to the old Stamford Bridge.
Absolutely. You
know? And it's I think that divide, and I think it is a lot to do with Sky, and it's a lot to do with BT and the media. The gulf between the Premier League and the rest of football is getting ridiculously wide. The Championship is a basket case financially because they're chasing that Premier League dream, and gradually that gap between the top two divisions and the bottom two divisions is getting wider and wider and wider. And I think it's a miracle that more clubs haven't gone under.
And I agree.
I hope coming out of this that they won't. But there's no excuse. I mean, I hate the fact that Sky, every now and again, Martin Tyler will catch himself on and say, you know, because somebody, one of the co-commentators will say, oh, that's the most goals scored in a Premier League game, blah, 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 at the Etihad. And Martin Tyler will say, well, I should remind you, there was football before
1992.
Yeah. But it's the fact that people need reminding of that. It's only, you know, and the fact is, of course, it's a completely different game now. And I don't yearn for the old days, but the fact that it's been written off and written out of history is sickening, because you have to have that continuity. And that's why I love players like Damien Delaney, for example, who was Palace captain, and all football. You know, it's like you had your Terry Hurlocks and your Harry Cripps.
Yeah, real characters, hardcore characters.
Yeah, and for us, Damien, we love Damien Delaney because he should never have got near the Premier League, basically. And he knows that himself. He got to the Premier League. He'd been through all sorts of hardships. He got to the Premier League with Palace. And I love talking to Damien. He's an intelligent bloke. But also, he realised, he said the first thing he does when he goes to a new club, when he goes to Palace, he learns about it. He learns about the history.
Yeah, the history of it all.
He learns when they were formed. He learns what community they came out of. He knew that we'd come out of the glaziers who moved the Crystal Palace from Hyde Park to Penge. He knew all that because most footballers panic. If you ask them about their favourite Palace game, it's like they don't really know
anything beyond their own contract, do they?
Which is understandable because they're employees. I get that, but I also get more people like Damien Delaney who goes, right, I need to learn about the culture of this club. And of course, they're the players that fans take to heart. Of course, you love your skillful players and you love the kids that come through your own youth team, but fans can recognise one of their own. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Fans can recognise, and also fans can do that stupid thing, which even now, in my 50s, I still do. You go, that could have been me.
We live in a dream world.
And my mates will remind me that I was the worst Sunday. I was a terrible Sunday footballer. And it's like, you know, when you're playing Sunday football, and there's always a couple of strange blokes watching, and you go, he's probably a scout. Yeah, and he's probably looking at me, even though I'm the worst player on the pitch. And you still convince yourself even now that if things had gone better in one particular game on a Sunday, you'd be playing for Palace. But for Damien, that's how it was. And you identify with those players even more. It's like Man City fans love Phil Foden more than they love most of the rest of the team because he's one of their boys.
And it's authenticity, isn't it?
It is, and also Phil Foden couldn't look more like a Mank if you cast him for a sitcom. Do you know what I mean? I like that. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, we love the fact that we've got young players like Wilf. Wilf was born a mile away from the stadium.
He's a local boy. That's right.
And you. We've had managed. I'm not a fan of Neil Warnock, but Neil Warnock was one of the most sensible managers. I've spoken to people like Tony Pulis, and I hate saying Alan Pardew's name out loud, but they simply wouldn't. They were very honest. Sam Allardyce was saying, they say, I'm not playing kids. I'm not looking at the youth team. It's too much pressure on them. It's not fair. They'll get you relegated. Whereas Neil Warnock's theory was, the fans will never ever have a go at young players. Never. If you put a young player in who's come through your youth team,
mid to late career players, yes, but not youngsters.
If a youngster's come out of your youth team, he gives 100%, they will never ever go. And he's absolutely right. And they're the players that we relate to. It's like, you're excited if you're linked with a 20, 30 million pound player, but you're more excited when someone like Aaron Wan-Bissaka or Tariq Mitchell comes through. And you know as well, because Palace, we might be a Premier League club, but we know that when Aaron Wan-Bissaka came through, we knew it was just a matter of how much we were going to get for him. Because we knew that money's going to help us stay solvent. And it's as simple as that. Same as Tyrick Mitchell. I think he's probably a better player than Wan-Bissaka was. So that's brilliant. But you live with the reality of the fact that we'll have to sell him. And that's great. And we wish him joy in his new club and thank him for making us 40, 50 million quid, which will help us
very nice too.
Another season, you know.
Achtung, Millwall. Just got a couple of questions. I mean, we haven't played Palace for a long time. It's a derby match that I actually miss because it's always entertaining.
Yeah.
What's your favourite Millwall Palace derby? And it's your choice, and I'm going to tell you my choice afterwards.
I think it's probably... I thought you might ask me a similar question.
Unpredictable.
Well, it's interesting because I know the answer to Damien Delaney said his favourite Palace match ever was a 0-0 draw. I think it was the last
really?
Time. I think it was the last time we played at the New Den. It's the season we got into the playoffs, I think. And it was a dreadful, dreadful game.
0-0 draw.
Dreadful
yeah.
game. But he said that was his favourite game because the way the game was, we were on the back foot the whole game. But him and Gabadon, he said it was his best game ever, although he also said the game against Chelsea when him and Diego Costa were just having a tear up for 90 minutes was his favourite game. I think my favourite would have to be the 4-3-1 at Selhurst.
We were
3-1 up and you got back to 3-3 in the last couple of minutes, and then Mark Bright
late goal,
last kick of the game, half volley from the edge of the box or from the centre circle, as he now says, basically. But
I was sat in the main stand, the Crystal Palace side, opposite the Arthur Waite stand.
That's the main stand. We still call it the main stand. Your fans would have been.
I was sat in there. My brother-in-law was a Palace fan, and he got me a ticket, so I was sat in there watching it. And I remember we got to three. We went ahead, didn't we? We went 3-1.
You went ahead, and then we got 3-1 ahead, and then you got two goals back to.
It was end to end. I mean,
it was a really good game. But I think I can't remember. Your fans were in In the half away,
they used to give us the whole half away.
That's right, you had the whole half away, and
it's got stopped.
Because I remember my vivid memory of the goal, apart from the disbelief, because that's not the sort of thing that happens to Palace, is two things: is the noise that came from the Millwall.
It was deafening, absolutely deafening.
But the thing is, it suddenly stopped because you were still celebrating your equaliser. Yeah. then it suddenly there was this sudden.
Yeah,
gutsy. But then my other memory was that the Brighties smashed it. It was a brilliant goal, and then accidentally turned towards your fans, and then very, very quickly turned away from your fans.
He finished up playing for Millwall very late in his career. Mark,
that's really interesting you say that, because I he had a book out last year, which is a really interesting book about his growing up as a foster kid and his experiences playing football. And I hosted his book launch, and obviously I read the book, and I'd completely forgotten that he ended up at...
Yeah, it would be in the late 90s.
Because he talks about Sheffield Wednesday a lot, and obviously... But yeah, I'd forgotten that. But yeah, it was...
Richard Shaw, forgot his surname. He was player of the season at Millwall. Late in his career, obviously, and he'd done the rounds.
It used to be a cliche in the sort of 70s and 80s that all our ex-players went to Orient, but then obviously...
Now they come to Millwall.
Yeah, well, because I remember we played Orient in 1979. It's one of those away games that I still remember now, because it was we needed to win pretty much guarantee his promotion, and it was the old Brisbane Road, and I think there were probably three Orient fans, and the whole ground was was Palace. But John Jackson was in goal for Orient, absolute Palace legend even now, and it just seems so odd. Yeah, and he probably got a bigger round of applause from all the Palace fans than he ever did from any Orient fan. But it was strange. London football, London football is a phenomenon that people outside the capital don't get. They always dismiss London football as like, oh, it's not. They don't think we have the same regional pride that they have up there. And it's like, but for me, still, you know, I worked on Match of the Day. I love Match of the Day. It's an important part of my life, and I still love the Match of the Day theme tune. But if ever I hear the big match music, and I hear Brian Moore's voice.
Yeah, it sends a shiver down the spine.
Absolutely, because for me, London football was it. And Brian Moore, God, he recognised the importance of London derbies and London football. And people outside London don't get the tribal. They don't get where we are geographically. They don't think that we have the same passions. And that's one of the things I used to quite like about the old Millwall ground. Because I used to think, come if you're a Rotherham fan, come down here and then tell me that we don't have the same passion and commitment that you've got up there. Do you know what I mean? It's like, fine, yeah, our beer might be watery piss, fine, it might be more expensive than your beer is up in Rotherham, but seriously, come down here and tell me that we haven't got the same passion in London for football as you.
I went to a Palace Millwall, when we're in the third division, so we're going back to the 75-76 season now, Palace, both third division sides, and there was a crowd of 37,000 in Selhurst Park
I think the second and third highest fourth division attendances ever at Palace Millwall games. There was a game, I think one of your record attendances. And this is back in the 60s when neither club were doing it.
Well, that's right, third and fourth division.
Third division south, and then third and fourth division. And it was, but because London football is again, I'll die in a ditch arguing on behalf of London, because it used to bemuse me that people couldn't understand the passions of London football. And it's like, but again, it just feeds into your, I'm very aware that I have a certain, and that comes across in the book, because I wanted in the book, because I can understand sometimes, because as an away fan, as a Londoner going to away games, you did have a certain arrogance. You did have a kind of...
Oh God, yeah. Well, you carry that with you all your life, don't you?
You do, but I like that. You did have a certain cock of the walk arrogance. You know what I mean? And I sort of like that, and I wind up. Yeah, I've got loads and loads. I've got 72.
I've taken that all over the world with me.
But I like that sway. I like that London
it's
sway.
It's in the blood.
It's always great to talk to London. It's like, I'd love. I hear a London accent anywhere in the world. I'm a happy man.
You have an immediate bond there.
It's like my closest mate in showbiz, Mark Webster.
Yeah,
West Ham fan. He used to do the basketball on Channel 4, and he's now on Talk Radio and Talk Sport 2, who's the most, he's from Kent, but he's like a giant jelly deal, do you know what I mean? Basically, but But he's as passionate about the history of London as I am. We will talk for hours. We can't, unfortunately, anymore. But yeah, we would talk. And yeah. I'd get home. You know, his missus always blamed me for getting him pissed and vice versa. Do you know what I mean? And Ali would say to me, what did you talk about all that time? I'd go, pub names. Because yeah. you just find it, yeah, because he would
pub names and nonsense because he would
say, oh, fucking hell, I was in Bermondsey, I saw this pub name, because he was brought up in a pub called The Hand and Marigold in Bermondsey.
Okay.
We could never work out why it was called that. So we've always been, and again, that it's that sort of little working class history.
Yeah, the little quirks
that should never be forgotten. It's like, I'm interested in all histories, you know what I mean? But I'm much more interested in the history of London than I am in the history of Coventry. Do you know what I mean?
Let me tell you about my favourite, which isn't actually, I defined it as a Mill versus Palace thing.
Yeah, of course.
And it is, because it's the end of the 75-76 season. And I think we'd completed our programme and we were in the promotion, the third promotion spot. And Palace needed to win their last three games of the season.
Yeah.
And there was a home game, Crystal Palace versus Chesterfield at Selhurst Park. Palace needed to win that and win the next couple, I think. Yeah. But that was, and it was a 0-0 draw. And the whole Whitehawks Lane terracing, because it was still terracing at that point.
I remember.
And it was packed with Millwall fans. And that was my choice. And we were singing Chesterfield all night.
Do you know
very weird.
I remember that because it had been a really, really hot day.
Yeah.
I remember that. And it was one of those strange things when you, because we were always in the Holmesdale until recently, and it's one of those things where you walk in and you go, okay, no, that's packed that end, isn't it? Yeah. Chesterfield have brought a lot down.
Chesterfield knew what hit them when they came out.
but then it's one of those you think, oh my God, they're Millwall fans, and then you think, do you know what? I might leave this one 5 minutes early and go the back way. But no, I do remember that. So I remember a game. I can't remember what it was close to that season when we played you last game of the season,
right?
And it was away and it was baking hot. And it was so hot that no one could even raise the energy to cheer. And it was like, but yeah, I remember that.
Those mid-70s summer
times. Because that season you were in the first division, was it? The year, was that 89 when the year?
89, and then 90 we got relegated.
That was when that documentary was, wasn't it? When they mic'd up David Ellery at the Millwall.
That's right.
Arsenal. I remember because it.
I don't think the Arsenal players weren't informed.
No, they were.
They couldn't show it.
Yeah, he was.
That was an Arsenal team with Tony Adams.
Tony Adams, yeah, it's a great
Ian Wright. Yeah. Great, great side.
Well, also, I interviewed David Ellery a couple of times. It still annoys me that he's either UEFA or FIFA's head of refereeing.
Is he? Okay.
He was the most arrogant snob I've ever met in my life. He was a form master at Harrow, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, public school.
He kept going on in this interview, and it was with Mark Webster and I were interviewing him for this Channel 5 thing called Live and Dangerous, which it was, I don't know why it's called Live and Dangerous. It was live, but it wasn't dangerous, but it was on very late at night. So, but every now and again, security guards will recognise us because they were the only people that used to watch
it.
But he came on the show and he just kept going on about, so we wanted to talk to him about refereeing. We wanted to raise that documentary, even though it was a few years afterwards, but he just kept going on about how we should be grateful to the public school system for making the rules of football in the first place. And it's like, yeah,
thank you for everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what his attitude was. And also then he was quite bemused because both Webster and I knew more about the history of football than he did, which kind of annoyed him. It's like, yeah, mate, you might've formulated the rules and it's, you know, your games of pushy shovey that you had at various public schools may have involved a ball, but eventually it's our game, not yours. So, yeah.
I don't think the Arsenal players were best impressed with him from the footage in that game that you can find on YouTube. So.
It's, I would implore anybody who's not heard it, you're talking to Millwall fans, so I think all of them will have seen it at some stage, but show it to your kids and warn them about the language. But it's astonishing. Tony Adams in particular is astonishing on it. I mean, he's clearly
an interesting bloke, Tony Adams. I follow his journey in life.
He is. He's a fascinating. But that Arsenal team, there was a bond. But I mean, you talked.
Oh God!
I mean,
yeah,
you talked to people like Paul Merson, and I've finally forgiven it because Ian Wright. Every time I see Ian Wright, he says, "Please don't call me Judas." He's like, well, all right.
Not for going to Arsenal.
But I'm going to. But and he says, what will it take for you to stop calling me that? I said, a time machine, basically. Because he knows it's not so much the fact he went to Arsenal. Of course he went to a bigger club. It's the fact that we played him in the League Cup 2 weeks afterwards and he scored and he ran across and kissed his badge in front of us. That was the issue.
But, well, that.
Yeah, but that bond between that particular Arsenal team, and I think every club, all the Millwall fans listening to this will probably... Like for me, it was the 89-90 team.
It's the classic side.
You've got a team you think that's the closest it got to being
to perfection. To perfection, or to being us.
You know, because that particular team had seven South Londoners in it. You go, that's as close as you're going to get. Yeah. You'll never get it now.
No. Yeah, different game.
And again, I'm aware that I said earlier on that I didn't want the book to be nostalgic, but it doesn't stop me being nostalgic every now and again.
Well, no, I didn't know what to expect out of this conversation, Kim. What I didn't expect was two old blokes moaning about the old days.
I'm sorry.
I had all these notes, the worthy mate, stuff.
That's why I've enjoyed it so much.
You're listening to After Millwall.
Huge thank you to Kevin Day for coming on to our show. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did, dear listeners. Very interesting guest, great company, and really thank Kevin for his time. Kevin's book is called Who Are You? It's 92 Clubs and Why You Shouldn't Support Them. It is available on Amazon in hardcover format, £11.71 when I checked last on Amazon. Also available via Kindle and in audiobook format. So do check that out. Also do take a look at the Price of Football Twitter feed, which is at Kieran Maguire. That's spelled K-I-E-R-A-N, Maguire, M-A-G-U-I-R-E on Twitter. At Kieran Maguire on Twitter. There is also a website, priceoffootball.com. Do listen to their podcasts. They're always excellent, uniformly excellent. And follow them on Twitter. A huge thank you to Kevin for coming on the show. Huge thank you to you too, dear listeners, for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll be back very, very soon, I hope, with another show from Acton Millwall. Until then, arrivederci Millwall.
Thank you for listening to Acton Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci Millwall. Till next time.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.